Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Alice Bryant, Christopher Jones Cruz, and Pete Musto. Later, Brian Lynn will have this week's education report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
India has opened its longest bridge in the country's northeast to strengthen its defenses close to a disputed border with China. The bridge is one of several projects whose construction has been sped up to make it easier for troops and artillery to travel to Arunachal Pradesh state in the Himalayas. China claims the state as its territory. It calls the area South Tibet. The 9.15-kilometer-long Dola Sadia Bridge crosses over the Brahmaputra River. It has been designed to carry the weight of 60-ton battle tanks. The bridge connects Arunachal Pradesh with the northeastern state of Assam. Construction began in 2011. Prime Minister Narendra Modi opened the bridge on the day marking his third year in office. He did not talk about possible military uses for the bridge. He said instead that the area will benefit from the bridge. He said it would speed up economic development in both Arunachal Pradesh and Assam states and would help tens of thousands of farmers sell their crops in new markets. Since he took office in 2014, Modi has worked to increase the country's economic growth through infrastructure projects. They include several projects in border regions of northeastern states that the government says are needed to strengthen India's defenses. For many years, India did not improve infrastructure in the region because it believed Chinese troops would use it in a war to gain access to areas of India. Indian and Chinese troops clashed briefly in 1962. Negotiations have taken place since then, but parts of their border are still disputed. Dipankar Banerjee is a security expert and former Indian Major General. He says that in the past, experts believed that if India built roads close to the border, then the roads could perhaps be used for an offensive purpose by either side. So there was some constraint on building roads. India hopes to complete a two-lane road by next year to a border area in Arunachal Pradesh, where all military supplies must now be transported by helicopter. Building the road near steep Himalayan mountains has been a difficult engineering problem. Some road building equipment had to be transported to the area by helicopters. India is also improving landing runways for large military aircraft. Indian experts say the projects will help India in its efforts to match the large transportation network China has built on its side of the border. Banerjee says China has got much better infrastructure. That is one of the major issues. Recently, Home Minister Rajnath Singh called on troops guarding the border to guard against Chinese attacks. We want peace, but peace with honor. We need to be capable of deterring anyone who may think we are weak, Singh told members of the Indo-Tibetan Border Police Force that guards parts of the border with China. Ties between the two countries have worsened in the past year. Last month, China strongly criticized a visit by Tibetan spiritual leader the Dalai Lama to Arunachal Pradesh. It warned that the visit would harm relations with India. I'm Mario Ritter.
Former Panamanian leader Manuel Noriega died in a Panama City hospital on Monday. He was 83 years old. Noriega had been in a coma since March. He had been recovering from several operations related to removing cancer from his brain earlier this year. Noriega ruled Panama from 1983 to 1989. His time in power is remembered as a time of corruption and violence in the Central American country. Before and during his rule, Noriega received millions of dollars in payments from the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA. In exchange, he provided intelligence to the U.S. government. He reported on events in Panama and the rest of Latin America. At the time, a number of rebel groups operated in the area. Noriega informed the CIA about guerrilla and terrorist activities. The United States used his information to seize illegal drugs at sea and follow the secret movement of money in and out of Panama's banks. But his relations with the U.S. government worsened after a political opponent was killed in 1985. In addition, Noriega appeared to begin working with the drug traffickers. Members of Panama's military attempted to overthrow him, but failed. The leaders of the attempted rebellion were arrested and executed without being tried. In 1989, President George H.W. Bush ordered 28,000 U.S. troops to invade Panama, oust Noriega from power, and capture him. During the operation, 23 American troops were killed. More than 300 others were wounded. The U.S. military estimates 200 Panamanian civilians died and 314 soldiers were killed. After Noriega's capture, he was brought to the United States
to face legal action. He was tried and jailed for 17 years after being found guilty on drug trafficking charges. In 2007, Noriega was sent to France, where he was jailed on money laundering charges. He was returned to Panama in 2011 and imprisoned. After Noriega was ousted, economic conditions in Panama seemed to improve. The United States gave the Panamanian government control of the Panama Canal in 1989. Panama expanded the waterway. The number of foreigners visiting the country has increased and property values have risen. But the country of 3.9 million still suffers from the corruption that worsened during Noriega's rule. And drug traffickers and money launderers still operate there. Panama's president, Juan Carlos Varela, said on the social networking website Twitter that Noriega's death closes a chapter in our history. Varela said Noriega's wife and three daughters have a right to bury him in peace. I'm Alice Bryant.
Off a road in rural Wisconsin sits a 57-year-old American working in an open garage. He makes a small amount of money by selling metal parts from broken equipment. Until 2 years ago, the man worked as a dairy farmer. He had 24 cows to milk. But, like many small dairy farmers, he was unable to compete with larger farms. The man says the Affordable Care Act, the health insurance program known as Obamacare, hurt his business. Under the law, Americans are required to take part in the program if they do not have a health insurance policy. The former farmer says Obamacare forced him and many of his friends to spend more money than they could afford for a product they did not want. He says years of insensitive government policies have fueled anger and questions about programs designed to improve American lives. The man is like many Americans who voted for Donald Trump last year after supporting Barack Obama in earlier presidential elections. He says that people in Trempealeau County no longer trust traditional politicians. All the money goes to the cities, he says. All the people in the rural areas this time said, "We've had enough." The former farmer says he voted for Trump mainly because he did not like the Affordable Care Act. But he admits Obamacare has helped him. 2 years ago, he was unable to work because of an infection in his leg. Doctors performed an emergency operation. Today, most of his earnings come from a government program for disabled Americans. Government estimates show that more than 200,000 formerly uninsured people in Wisconsin now have health care because of Obamacare. Estimates also show that more than 2 million Americans have additional benefits. But the former farmer says almost everyone else he knows did not get sick or injured since they signed up for Obamacare. He says many of them had to pay a lot of money for the policy. He says even if he did want it, it should have been his decision and not a requirement. He says the government should not have forced him to buy the insurance. The man asked VOA not to release his name because he fears he will be spied on. He said people should not believe anyone who says they supported Trump for reasons other than their anger over the Affordable Care Act.
A new airplane may soon be able to travel into space at more than 5 times the speed of sound. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, announced last Wednesday that a project by the aerospace company Boeing was making progress. DARPA said Boeing will complete advanced design work for an experimental space plane. DARPA is an agency in the United States Department of Defense. It creates new technology for the American military. The experimental space plane is called the XS-1, or the Phantom Express. It would operate without a human pilot. The goal of the project is to make it easier to reach low Earth orbit, between 160 and 2,000 kilometers above the surface of the Earth. For example, the space plane could be used to launch a satellite very quickly. Currently, a lost military or commercial satellite might take months to replace. By 2020, the project could make it possible to launch one of the XS-1 vehicles 10 times within 10 days. Jess Spanable is the DARPA program manager. In a press release, she said DARPA was pleased with Boeing's earlier work on the project. She added the Phantom Express spaceplane could reduce the cost of space launches to 1/10 of their current levels and would make them possible on demand. The XS-1 would be neither a traditional airplane nor a normal launch vehicle, but rather a combination of the two, said Spanable. DARPA reports that the Phantom Express will be about the size and weight of a business jet. Instead of using rockets to launch, it will use self-contained super cold fuel. Right before reaching outer space, the plane would launch a smaller rocket. This would be able to lift a satellite weighing up to 1,360 kilograms into low Earth orbit. The XS-1 would then return to Earth, landing like a normal plane. DARPA said the plane could then possibly be reused within hours. The Phantom Express could fly as fast as Mach 10, or 10 times the speed of sound, DARPA said. But the XS-1 is still years away from completion. DARPA reported testing of the plane's engines on the ground is not planned to start until 2019. I'm Pete Musto.
A survey recently found that Facebook pays its interns $8,000 a month, more than any other American company. The survey was carried out by the website Glassdoor, on which people can post information about job experiences and pay. In second place was Microsoft, which pays its interns $7,100 a month. Oil company ExxonMobil came in third at $6,500. It was one of only a few non-technology companies to make the top 25 list. Amazon and Apple interns earn $6,400 a month, while Google pays $6,000, according to the survey. These internships pay much more than the average American earns. The government estimated the average U.S. pay in 2015 was about $4,000 a month. One thing that has changed over the years is that many companies now use the same methods for recruiting interns as for full-time employees. Ed Koch is the Director of Research, Public Policy, and Legislative Affairs for the National Association of Colleges and Employers, or NACE. He says companies now come directly to colleges, hoping to find interns who will later become permanent employees.
They're very selective in terms of who they choose to bring on board, particularly because they want to be able to convert that student into a full-time hire once that internship is over.
This means that students should be preparing for internships in the same ways they would for a real career job. NACE connects U.S. college career service centers and conducts surveys on the job market for graduates. Koch said at companies the organization works with, about 52% of interns end up getting full-time jobs. He said research also suggests that interns working in paid internships get hired faster than those who are not paid.
The primary reason for that is that the employers that provided paid internships actually were the ones hiring the students. They were looking at them in a probationary fashion.
According to a NACE survey, students who completed paid internships with private for-profit companies received $53,521 in starting pay. Those who took unpaid internships received an average starting offer of $34,375. Another NACE study found that unpaid internships led to decreased levels of job satisfaction. They also resulted in less development of skills than paid internships, but unpaid interns gained a better understanding of their career field, and some increased their academic performance, the research showed. William Goodlow is president and chief executive officer of the not-for-profit Sponsors for Educational Opportunity, or SEO. He says many companies have found that an internship is a much more valuable recruiting tool than a job interview.
What they find is that interviews are not as reliable as they would like, but if you get to work with someone, observe them for 10 weeks, then you have a much better sense if you want to ask them back full-time after they graduate from college.
The SEO Career Program recruits and trains college students and places them in paid internships. The organization works with underserved and/or underrepresented students, including African Americans, Hispanics, and Native Americans. SEO reports that 80% of its interns end up getting full-time job offers. Goodlow noted that one problem with unpaid internships is that they limit the candidates to only those with enough money to support themselves. Besides internships, some schools offer students another kind of work experience called cooperative or co-op education. Co-op students balance classroom study with full-time employment throughout the school year. The students are paid by companies while working during extended breaks from academic studies. The University of Cincinnati, or UC, in the Midwestern state of Ohio, started the first American co-op program in 1906. Today, it has partnerships with more than 1,800 companies. Depending on the area of study, most co-op students at UC earn between $12 to $27 per hour. This would be equal to yearly pay of $25,000 to $56,000. Some UC programs, including engineering, design, and architecture, require students to complete co-op programs. In others, students can choose between a co-op or internship. Kettle Cedarkreutz is the head of UC's Division of Experience-Based Learning and Career Education. As with internships, he says companies now use co-ops as a major recruiting tool.
Right now, we have an average of a 98-point placement rate in co-op jobs. Then what happens when they graduate, they have 20 months of practical experience in their major under their belt.
Cedarkreutz said co-ops can also be good for students' academic performance and help them reach their graduation goals.
In a co-op program, they actually do graduate on time to a very large extent because they learn something in the classroom and then they go out in industry and they get to apply it and they get to sort of digest it.
UC also operates international co-op programs in which students study languages and then go to work at companies in Japan, Germany, and Singapore. I'm Brian Lynn.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.